allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The motion pay bills? Approve the minutes, I'm sorry.
Approve the minutes from previous.
Second.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Dixon?
Yes.
Resolutions, Tim.
Sure, as we go into travel and training, 13 travel and training requests for you today. First involves Veteran Services, their commission traveling Columbus, Ohio, March 25th, $423 for the Veteran Service Training Conference. Next, Veteran Services, again, same conference for Stamper and Perry, $282. So we move on to Adult Probation, request travel for Brashear, Cook, and Jacobs to attend the OCDA Spring Conference, Columbus, Ohio, April 20th, 22nd, $2,000. Next, from the Sheriff's Office, Captain Katie McMahon and Vicki Jo Barger to attend OWSA Training Corrections Management, $1,000, Columbus, Ohio, April 22nd to 24th. From the courts, Common Pleas Courts, Robert Minky to attend the OCDA Spring Conference, $700, Columbus, Ohio, April 19th to 22nd. From the Engineer's Office, Greg Wilkins to attend the ASHE National Conference, Atlanta, Georgia, June 3 to 7, $2,000. Next, Matt Loeffler, Engineer's Office, to attend the ASHE National Conference, Atlanta, Georgia, June 3 to 7, $1,500. Next is the Sheriff's Office for Katie McMahon and Mark Smith to attend the AJA Conference, Louisville, Kentucky, April 25th to 30th, $2,684. Next, from the Sheriff's Office, Sheriff Richard Jones to attend the National Sheriff Association's annual conference, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, June 19 to 25, $2,825. From Building and Zoning, William Balsinger, Mark Rutherford, Clay Callahan to attend the Installer Inspection Continued Education class, Dublin, Ohio, May 12th, $1,269. Next is from the County Care Facility, Chuck Demidovich, Michelle Lynch, Susan Geckler, Greg Geckler, to attend the Ohio County Association Spring Conference, Perrysburg, Ohio, May 29, $1,005. Next, from Common Pleas, Gary Yates, to attend the Ohio Community Corrections Association Annual Conference, Columbus, Ohio, $700, April 1 to April 3rd. Next, Common Pleas, Gary Yates again, to attend the Community Corrections Collaborative Committee meeting, Columbus, Ohio, March 11th, $300. As we move on to finance resolutions, we have four items to consider today. First item in the general fund is a reallocation between accounts to address the allocation of the reduction that was taken by domestic relations courts. Number two is a advance to the fund for the Section 125 of $10,000. Item three is a probate court, an increase in appropriations in order to purchase a van for the court, paid for out of the probate court business fund, Fund 521. And finally, number four, out of capital improvements fund, a transfer of $2,087 and $3,698 between accounts to accommodate the payment of maintenance on the sheriff's Visionaire software. Next, under finance, is to amend the official certificate of estimated resources dated February 26 for the SVAA grant, fund number 1364, in the amount of $2. As we move on to personnel, we have 15 personnel actions for you to consider today. First is to accept and place on file the employee payroll for Job and Family Services for the period February 14th through February 27th. All changes in rates of pay has been reconciled back to previously approved resolutions. Next is to approve a step increase for collective bargaining unit member in Children's Services, Elizabeth Reisner, to $15.66. Next is a step increase for Don Richardson, Children's Services Collective Bargaining Unit member, to $19.31, effective February 28th. Next is a step increase for Rachel Maloney, Children's Services Collective Bargaining Unit member, to $16.63, effective February 28th. Next is a step increase for Tabika Shanik, a Collective Bargaining Unit member, Children's Services, to $17.65 an hour. Next is a step increase for Matthew Stacy, Collective Bargaining Unit member, Children's Services, to $21.79 an hour, effective March 1. Next is a step increase for Carrie Jones, Collective Bargaining Unit member, Children's Services, to $13.97, effective March 1. Next is accept the resignation of Van Berry, a social services worker in Children's Services. Next, to approve a comp time payout of $1,240.40 to Kim Short in Children's Services. Also, another request to approve a comp down payout of $233.88 to Paul Cook in Children's Services. Next is to approve the promotion of Tiffany Waldo as Social Services Worker 4 in Children's Services to a rate of $24.04. Next, to approve the abolishment of two positions within the Information Technology or Information Services Department. Next is to approve a leave of absence without pay for Karina Esparza, employed in Domestic Relations Court. The leave of absence shall be February 23rd to April 3rd, 2009. Next is to approve continuing eligibility of full-time employees whose hours have been reduced for budget reasons below the full-time standard to receive health, dental, and life insurance as full-time employees. This relates to the Domestic Relations Court. And finally, to accept the resignation of Christopher Smith as Wastewater Operator 2 in the Butler County Water and Sewer area. As we move on to Job and Family Services and Children's Services, we have 10 resolutions to consider today. First is to approve a contract with Presley Ridge, retroactive back to November 1, 2008. For therapeutic services in the amount of $370,000. This contract provides diagnostic assessment, family group and individual counseling to the people, foster kids and families in the program, court appearances. Next is to approve a agreement with Butler County Educational Services Center, period January 1/09 to December 31, 2009. $254,925 for therapeutic interagency preschool program services. This basically is early education intervention, promoting health, social interaction. It also includes mental health therapy, speech therapy, treatment plans, and parenting education. Next, Children's Services requests you to approve an agreement with Lighthouse Youth Services. Retroactively to February 1/08 to June 30/09 for placement services for $428,086. This includes therapeutic, foster care, independent living programs, group home for girls, and a group youth development home for boys. Children's Services next requests you to approve an agreement with Lifespan, Inc. from January 1/09 to December 31/09 for therapeutic services for $26,000 with Lifespan. This includes pharmacological management, mental health assessment, behavioral counseling and therapy, and group behavioral therapy. Children's Services also requests you to approve an agreement with Sharon J. Francis, RN, retroactively back to January 1, 2009, extending to December 31, 2009 for professional nursing services in the amount of $6,500. You know, this is for checks of foster children that follows a prescribed checklist for the for and an examination of children. The Children's Services also requests you to approve an agreement with St. Aloysius Orphanage for the February 108, retroactively back to February 108 to June 30th, 09 for placement services for up to an amount of $142,178. Children's Services asks you to approve an agreement with Aspen Counseling Associates, LLC, for the period January 109 to December 3109 for mental health services for up to $10,000. Children's Services asks you to approve an agreement for behavioral health science services, for up to $55,000 for individual and group behavioral health counseling and therapy, psychological therapy, pharmacological management, in-health counseling, and crisis management. Children's Services also requests you to approve an agreement with Deborah C. Joy, period January 109 to December 3109 for mental health services, up to a maximum of $40,000. This involves adoptment assessment, placement recommendations, bonding assessments, follow-up on how the children are adjusting within either a foster care or placement area. Next, Children's Services ask you to approve an agreement with Amy Keller, doing the business as the next right thing for the period January 109 to December 3109 for substance abuse services in the amount of $230,000. This includes substance abuse counseling, parent assessment, parent education, urine screening, court appearances. As we move on to water and sewer requests three resolutions to be considered today. The first is to award a contract for the purchase sodium illuminate for the Butler County Water and Sewer Department to Univar Inc. for the amount of $104,300. Next is to approve the sale of county property to be sold at a public auction or by sealed bid as designated by the county administrator. These involve the auction off of five pieces of equipment, including a John Deere tractor, two John Deere tractors, a night spreader, a John Deere ripper, and a Kraus disc. Water and Sewer also requests you to approve a disbursement in the amount of $3,967.53 in conjunction with the Ohio Public Works Commission financing for the cast iron water replacement contract. The engineer requests three items for your approval today. First is to advertise for bids for ODOC specs for bulk treated sodium chloride. Next, they request to approve a contract with Baron Becker Engineers for engineering services for Tylersville Road for up to a maximum of $65,355. Next is to cancel a maintenance bond on Creekside Meadows, Section 2. And then under miscellaneous, next is to approve a grant to the Butler County Historical Society for $15,000. The final item on the agenda is to approve 173, payment authorizations.
Move to approve.
Second.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Dixon?
Yes.
I'd like to move also to excuse Commissioner Jolivet for today's meeting.
Second.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Dixon?
Yes.
Mr. Furman, you have I got one thing. Just I keep getting asked when I'm out from various citizens about our feelings on e-check again. I keep hearing rumblings. I don't know for a fact that anything is coming down the pike, but I definitely want to go on record as being opposed to another e-check situation here in Butler County. We fought that hard the last time and brought experts in from as far away as California to show that it did not work and was not doing what it was supposed to. And there's got to be another means, but definitely don't want anything to do with e-check. So.
You want to support a resolution to that effect, and we'll send it up?
That That'd be great. Yeah.
Mr. Furman moves.
Okay. Mr. Furman proposes a resolution to oppose the reinstitution of e-check.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Dixon. Mr. Furman?
Yes.
Mr. Dixon?
Yes. Obviously, it didn't work the first time. There's no sense wasting more money on the second time.
Exactly.
Especially since they've gotten rid of all the buildings and everything else.
Yeah.
Redo the whole thing. Makes no sense.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll go to the, any comments from the audience, the visitors? Anybody have any to address the board?
Mark Hevercost, 7356 Weathersfield Drive in Westchester. You may remember a couple months ago, I had addressed the commission on my concerns with this fiber optic bid that had gone out to connect the fiber optic ring with the Voice of America facility. Since that time, I've amassed a little bit of information on my own as far as homework, specifically getting back to something Commissioner Dixon had been told, that the system, the bidder there that was selected was selected because of their extremely low numbers. First of all, in an email from employee Williams to employee Sheets, Dennis Nichols has found a provision in the original NORMAP contract obligating Bell to string fiber optic from the loop to Voice of America. I think it is part of the base contract and shouldn't cost us anything. Next of all, from employee, actually copied to employee Sheets and employee Sullivan, this is where he recommends Cincinnati Bell for the contract, even though they were the highest of the three bids. In the first recommendation, he says that the Cincinnati Bell bid was only $220 higher than the iFiber bid. It was more like $20,000 higher. Secondly, or thirdly, he says existing Cincinnati Bell infrastructure, fiber, poles, and conduit required in the area as if they already had fiber, which I told you they had just run in the same time frame that the contract was out for bid. And CBT does not own any poles in that area. They all belong to Duke. In another email from employee Sheets to employee Sullivan, this was after you've received the three bids. He says, Tim wondered if you have any three-year lease rent numbers from CBT for fibers. If not, or if they're greater than our construction costs, he suggests we let CBT know we have bids to buy fiber that are cheaper than these figures, so they really need to sharpen their pencils, or we'll go another route. Then I have a copy of the lease figures that Cincinnati Bell sent over. But what's ironic about this is I have copies of emails that are 3 months before this went out for bid, when these exact lease numbers were discussed with Cincinnati Bell before this project went out for bid. So we have employees of the county discussing with a contractor how they would propose to do a system. We have the county going out for public bid. We have the county rejecting the lowest bid based on a bunch of false assertions. And then we have the county negating the bids and going out and leasing something that was discussed prior to the project even going out for bid. I have a whole nother litany of emails that go along with this. I'm not an attorney and I don't suggest to be one, but I think this really opens up the county to a litany of litigation on the way this was handled. And it's my understanding the county has another bid proposal out for internet access. And the same thing is going on there, where the low bidder is not being considered, and they're going back to Cincinnati Bell to figure out how they can go with them for service. So I'd ask that you please take some due diligence to look into these emails, to look into this correspondence that are going back and forth between county employees and the contractors that are going to be bidding on these projects, coming up with these I'll call them a scheme before something goes out for bid, so that eventually the same players are always being awarded the contracts. Thank you.
You have extra copies of those, Mr. Habercost?
I will make sure you get them.
Thank you.
Mr. Habercost, let me speak to the one issue, and I think Tim will probably want to speak to the rest, but I think he was referring to the email that said that Cincinnati Bell was initially liable or initially under contract to run, string that fiber to the facility. We also have that contract and read that, forwarded up to the prosecutor's office for an opinion. And the prosecutor's opinion was that it was not, it didn't specifically say that Cincinnati Bell was the person that's supposed to run it. Now, I don't want to get into a lot of detail that probably doesn't mean anything, but let me just summarize it and say, on the first agreement, it wasn't Cincinnati Bell, but it was the internet company was supposed to run that service to Miami University out there. In one of the amended contracts, that paragraph was changed in a way that left out some important verbiage that said that they were specifically responsible for that. We then sent that to the prosecutor and said, it's our belief that the contractor originally was responsible for that, which really wasn't Cincinnati Bell. It was really Normap, and Cincinnati Bell ended up doing the work for Normap. And the short version of it is that the final document that got executed wasn't clear. It didn't specifically say that Normap, which then would have been the responsibility of Cincinnati Bell, has to do that. So the prosecutor wrote his opinion. It said, based on this document, it's impossible to tell who's responsible. Now, we have since made a claim, or in the process of making a claim, against the original Normap for that money to put that service out there. So we were under contract with Miami University, and they were ready to open their Westchester facility. So there was no doubt that the county had an obligation to provide that. An original contract, Normap was the contractor, was responsible to put that out there. In the amended contract, somewhere along the way, that language got changed. I still believe that it drops back to Normap. I think the intent was there, the original contract was there. I think it was very clear. So we're in the process of making a claim to Normap for that, so it doesn't cost the county any money, because I agree it really should not be our responsibility. But the bottom line is Miami was going to open. They had thousands of students out there that needed that internet access. They couldn't operate without it. We had made a commitment to them, and the county needed to stand behind that commitment, and that's what we did. So in a sense, you're right. But legally, we're working through that issue right now. So I can speak to that directly because I was part of that discussion. The other part about the leasing and that, I'll let Tim talk. Bill, you want to explain that?
Well, sure. It really ties into what you're just saying, is that, you know, because Miami University wanted to get in there, you know, immediately, is why we started some discussions on the lease. You know, basically the responses from Cincinnati Bell on any lease was just pathetic. You know, it wasn't in the ballpark that it needed to be, i.e. the one email that I indicated that, you know, we need to sharpen our pencil. You know, basically, we don't really want to own fiber in that particular area. You know, we had an obligation to put it in for a specific purpose. That's why we ended up with going with a lease at the end, while we sort out the legal aspects of the Normap situation.
So it was really the lease allowed us to do less upfront money for the county while we go down the legal track to recover all of our money for making that connection, is what was in the original contract, is what I'm sure you're referring to. So it is, it's not clear cut. The bottom line is we are, using the legal process to try and get that money back. And the reason we did the lease and not paid the money up front is because we're hopeful that litigation will bring those dollars back to us, and we have less money out of pocket to begin with. So.
But the system was never installed according to the contract bids.
To the original contract, you're exactly right. You're dead on it.
That system would have to be reinstalled to do that.
The contract was amended when it changed two or three times. It had two or three versions amended to it, and that's the part we're arguing about right now.
And not only that, but all of this fiber that's been run on the system since then would have to have extra fibers installed in it that were never installed. And that includes all the fiber that Bell's run to facilities like the 911 facility.
I can't speak to that issue because
I'd
don't.
I'd like to speak to you after.
Yeah. Okay. But, you know, I'll be happy to sit with you and you can share that with me. I guess the bottom line is we're aware of the situation. We're working on it. It's not something that is clear cut. But you know, your information is correct. But there's other things that go with it that later has been done that we're trying to work through. Anybody else have anything to bring for the board? Chuck, anything else?
I don't think. Carl, good to see you.
Okay, do we have a motion to adjourn?
Move to adjourn.
Second. I'm sorry. Look at him. Like,
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Dixon?
Yes. I'm looking at you like, why didn't you second that, Tim?